She was the wife of the Emperor Augustus and the mother of Tiberius. Legend has it that she destroyed everyone that stood in the path of her son's ascent to the throne. But how much of that is true? That's the subject of Eileen Dugan's conversation with historian Anthony Barrett.
In those ancient days before VCRs and DVDs, I remember running back to my dorm room every Sunday night at 8 o'clock to catch the next episode of the BBC series, I, Claudius. It was mesmerizing. Such scheming, such treachery, and such a high body count. And so many great performances, including that of Sean Phillips as that most wicked of all noble Roman ladies, Livia, the wife of the Emperor Augustus and the mother of his successor, Tiberius. But however great the performance, was that the real Livia? To what extent are our modern views of her colored not just by a television series, but by ancient propagandists? With us today to re-examine the life of one of ancient history's most vilified characters is Dr. Anthony A. Barrett, Professor of Classics at the University of British Columbia. Professor Barrett is the author of Livia, First Lady of Imperial Rome. Welcome, Dr. Barrett.
Oh, hello.
What is the perception of Livia in the ancient sources?
Well, in the main ancient source, Tacitus, Livia is presented as a villainess. In fact, Livia is presented just as she is in the TV series and from based on Robert Graves' book, I, Claudius. This comes about because Tacitus was a member of the senatorial class. It was the class that had been put to one side when the imperial system came in. So Tacitus was very hostile to the system of Roman emperors, and even more hostile to the women of the imperial family, to the wives, the sisters, the mothers, who interfered in government that he already regarded as somewhat illegal. So he is naturally very, very hostile towards her. And it's a dangerous hostility because Tacitus is such a wonderful, compelling writer that he is persuasive unless one looks very, very carefully at what he has to say.
In your books, you demand reassessments of notorious figures in Roman history that Tacitus and other authors dealt with, like Livia, Caligula, Agrippina. Why is that necessary, and how is that possible?
Well, it's necessary because there has been a tendency for centuries to take the accounts of people like Tacitus and others like Suetonius and the Greek writer Dio and accept them as more or less the truth. And these accounts have been passed on from generation to generation. Now, modern scholars will say we have to treat Tacitus with some caution. We have to recognize that he is biased and prejudiced, but they tend not then to take the next step and to reconstruct history, taking account of these deep biases. And I think they address their views very well to the scholarly community because we're fully prepared for what we're going to read in the ancient sources. But I think that for the general public, the impressions have been shaped largely by things like I, Claudius. I, Claudius, in turn, is based on the ancient texts. We can't fault Robert Graves. He was a classical scholar, and he followed the ancient texts, but he followed the ancient texts uncritically. And they have now been transmitted to the public at large, and I think create a very false, if engaging, picture of the ancient world. So I have to be quite honest here, I actually encourage my students to watch I, Claudius to get a good, vivid impression of the early imperial world and to sort out who all the various characters are.
So who was Livia, and how much do we know of her life before she married Octavius?
We know very little of her before her marriage to Octavian, who of course becomes Augustus, the first emperor. She of course was born at a time when Rome was still a republic, when it was governed by, in a formal sense, a representative democracy, but in practice was controlled by a small number of very powerful families. She belonged to one of these powerful families, the Claudians. She married a Claudian, a man who was very ambitious but largely incompetent. And in the civil wars that took place in the last century of the Republic, her husband seemed to back the wrong side at every turn. And so she led, in her early years, it seems, a rather shiftless existence, traveling from country to country in exile. And we don't, unfortunately, know the details of this life, except that at one stage they tried to escape from Sparta and in a forest fire, and most of her hair was burned off. So that's the kind of anecdote that has survived about this her earlier life.
How did she come to meet and then marry Octavian?
Well, we don't know of the exact circumstances of her first meeting. Octavian came to an alliance with his archenemy, Mark Antony, and Livia's husband had been a supporter of Mark Antony. As a result of the truce, there was an amnesty, and so Livia and her husband were permitted to return to Rome. And it seems that very soon after their return, she met Augustus, she met Octavian as he was then, and they fell in love. And I'm prepared to believe the ancient sources on this, that it was a sort of instant love match with certain political advantages on both sides.
Would you consider this to have been a good match, apart from affection?
Well, it was certainly a good match in the traditional way that we look upon a marriage, because they stayed devoted to one another, as far as we could tell, until Augustus's death. It was a good match politically, because Augustus, or Octavian as he was then, was a rising star, and Livia, I think, recognized this, probably having been disappointed by her first husband. She recognized a winner. She was, as I've mentioned, from the powerful Claudian family, so she brought strong aristocratic credentials with her, which were very, very useful to Octavian. So both politically and personally, I think it was almost a perfect match.
In the course of your discussion about Livia's life with Augustus, you note that she was very careful to observe a line of demarcation between the power within the home and playing an overt role in politics. How did she do that, and why was that necessary?
Yeah, that's a good question. It was Livia's great achievement, I think, to strike this balance. The Romans were relatively enlightened when it came to the status of women. Women could own property in a way that they are still unable to in many parts of the world, and couldn't do so in the Western world until well into the 20th century. So they had a number of rights that were quite impressive. But on the other hand, women were not allowed to hold public office. This was a firm, fixed rule. Their sphere was the domus, was the household. When the imperial system came into being, this presented a problem, because the emperor's domus, the emperor's home, became the sort of first family of the Roman world, and in many ways it became identified with the state. The family had to embody all the qualities of the Roman state. So this meant that Livia did not hold a public position. Technically, she was simply the wife of Augustus. But at the same time, she did represent a family that was regarded by Romans as, in some ways, the ideal embodiment of the Roman family. And she succeeded in doing this largely by an understanding what we now call public relations. She realized that if she wanted to influence affairs, that she had to do this very, very much behind the scenes. She couldn't thrust herself forward and assert herself as a public figure. She had to do it indirectly, through influence on her husband, through indirect friendships. She was very, very generous to all classes of Romans. And in the Roman system, this kind of activity was reciprocal. She would be generous to Romans, and in return, they would give her their support. Even in her appearance, she was very, very skillful. We know from ancient comments and from statues and the like that she obviously dressed very well, but reminds me of Jackie Kennedy. She wore elegant clothes, but nothing ostentatious or showy. She didn't wear lots and lots of jewelry, which would have offended conservative Romans. And her great-grandson, Caligula, the emperor, described her in a phrase, Ulixe Stolata, Ulysses in a matron's garb. Ulysses, the clever, cunning Greek hero, but she wore the matron's garb, which was the great symbol of propriety and respectability. She also, I should mention the final point on this, she was very, very careful to project an image of moral uprightness. And this she would have had to work on, because all of the other imperial women have stories attached to them about their sexual misbehavior. There's not a single hint anywhere of Livia committing any kind of sexual impropriety. And I think this was something she realized was very, very important to the Romans. She had to project herself as a very highly moral person.
What was Livia's relationship with her son Tiberius? Did she, as the ancients would have us believe, do all that she could to guarantee that he would be Augustus's successor? Did she really kill all those people?
Well, the ancient sources have her with a kind of monomania that she's determined, above all else, to make sure that her son would succeed. And to bring that about, she had to murder, she had to poison, usually, all of those who stood in his way. Well, first of all, on the murders, when we look at these in detail, the arguments just don't hold up. One of them, for instance, Gaius Caesar, whom Augustus had adopted, was killed on the eastern frontier when he foolishly went too close to the enemy camp and was struck by an arrow and then died of fever sometime afterwards. So the ancient sources still attribute that kind of death to Livia, but it's pretty well fantastic. And I think the truth is that Augustus had decided that Livia's son, Tiberius, would succeed him as emperor. And Augustus knew his own mind. He listened to Livia's advice, but he knew his own mind. He was politically very, very shrewd. And he had decided on Tiberius. It didn't really need Livia maneuvering, manipulating on the sidelines to bring this about. Tiberius was a great general. He was enormously popular. He was an able administrator. So I think that was decided anyhow. Relationship with her son, we don't know much about that before Tiberius became emperor. Tiberius, in fact, spent most of his time outside of Rome as a general on various frontiers, and a very successful one. So we don't know of any friction between him and his mother before he became emperor, and I don't think there's any reason to think that there would have been, except that Tiberius, unlike Augustus, had a very strong sense of the proper place for a woman. Augustus accepted that Livia could not, of course, hold public office, but he nevertheless saw Livia as a very valuable advisor, a source of wisdom and counsel. Tiberius not only felt that a woman shouldn't be in office, but he felt also that she should, in a sense, know her place, that she should remain silent, that she shouldn't offer advice, she shouldn't interfere. So I think that perhaps even before he succeeded Augustus, Tiberius might have been a little wary of his mother.
What do you think was Livia's positive legacy? I mean, was she involved in any construction projects or anything good about Rome?
Livia left a very positive legacy of herself in the sense that she was highly regarded as the kind of ideal of Roman womanhood for generations afterwards. She unfortunately didn't really leave a lasting political legacy because the other imperial women didn't use her as the model that she provided for them, and to their cost. In terms of building projects and so on, yeah, she was involved in encouraging a certain number of, building certain temples and the like, and she established some charitable foundations, which I suppose you could describe as a legacy. But I say Livia's legacy mainly came in this kind of image of the ideal imperial wife that was there for other women to aspire to. But if anything, it might have had a rather sort of negative impact, because I think that the Romans afterwards tended to measure the later wives against the standard of Livia and found the later women lacking.
You've already mentioned Jackie Kennedy in terms of being a first lady. Can we see any similarities between the life of Livia and other modern first ladies like Nancy Reagan or Hillary Clinton?
People will often say that they see an analogy with Hillary Clinton, and I don't really see that, because I think that while Hillary Clinton was the first lady, she played a very public role in political affairs, in her role in attempting to reorganize the health scheme. So I would say there wasn't a parallel there, but I think that Nancy Reagan is a wonderful parallel. And we, of course, should never push historical analogies too far. But if I look at the Reagans, I think here is a couple. In each case, I believe it's true of the Reagans, it was a second marriage, that they'd both been divorced, as was the case with Augustus and Livia. They both, as far as we know, certainly in the public image, both couples were devoted to one another. They were noted for that. Nancy Reagan, someone who was very elegant in the way that she dressed, believed in astrology, as we discovered, as Livia did. Also, and I think this is the most important parallel, I think Nancy Reagan was very influential over her husband, but she did it in the background. And the public life that she played, again, analogous to Livia, I think she played a public life that was, one would say, appropriate to the First Lady. As I recall, she was involved in encouraging young people not to use drugs. This is something I think that the Americans would accept in an American First Lady, while many Americans were not willing to accept Hillary Clinton being involved in matters of health policy and the like. The same thing was true in Rome, that that Livia could sponsor temples, she could sponsor charitable activities because the Romans thought that was appropriate of the emperor's wife. But like Nancy Reagan, she didn't intervene publicly and directly in political matters.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Barrett.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Dr. Anthony Barrett, professor of classics at the University of British Columbia and author of Livia, First Lady of Imperial Rome.